Welcome to the Become Nomad podcast. Whether you're already a nomad or aspiring to become one, we're here to supply you with relevant information to help keep you on the road and stay away from extremely cold places. I'm recording this episode from Chisinau, Moldova, where it's actually minus 18 degrees, which makes me think about how much wisdom have I gained after 5 years of traveling if I'm still getting stuck in the winter in Europe. So those are things that I'm thinking to myself. And today, in this episode, we're going to speak with Kavi Gupta. Kavi Gupta is a digital nomad and is also writing about the topic in several magazines, the topic of digital nomads, more than anything in Forbes. So it's very interesting to speak with Kavi because he knows about the trends and about all the recent developments on the topic of digital nomads. And I think that all of us can learn a lot from his knowledge. Let's just jump into it. Kavi, really great to have you with us. Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
Can you give us maybe, Kavi, a quick introduction about what do you do in life and maybe the connection it has to the nomadic lifestyle?
I'm a writer for Forbes and I cover the future of work, marketing technology and culture transformation. I also manage content and marketing for a business innovation company called Strategizer. And I also write a certain amount of ebooks throughout the year on different aspects of startup culture, technology culture, and future of work. I'm a digital nomad. I've been a digital nomad for 2 years now. And in 2015, I traveled a combined 130,000 kilometers.
Currently, I think that you're more than anything focusing on writing in Forbes, right? Or is it like a wide array of magazines?
Forbes is my main publication that I write for, yes. I've been featured in other nomad-centric websites and also been interviewed by other podcasts, but Forbes is where I contribute the majority of my writing.
Nice. And you're currently based in, or you're currently staying in Australia, and this is one of your bases as you're doing the nomadic lifestyle?
Absolutely. Perth, Western Australia, which is on the far, far, far left-hand side of the country, as well as Toronto, Canada, which I don't spend as much time in, but I'm there once in a while.
So the first question that comes to mind, you know, because you had a lot of topics probably to choose from when you write on. Why is it that the nomadic topic or the digital nomad topic was one of the things that you decided to center on? Because I'll just expand it a little bit. Maybe people in the past used to look at it as some kind of, a fad or something that is not really a topic. And now it kind of is, but what dragged you into focusing on this topic?
When I left Canada almost 2 years ago to travel, my girlfriend and I, when we left, we knew that we wanted to stay relevant while we were on the road. We had left very, very long and successful careers in the corporate world. And rather than having kind of a blank spot in my resume, I wanted to keep writing and keep creating and keep producing. That's something I like to do. And it's something that kind of keeps me going. By that time, Forbes had approached me to write about technology. And I had told the editors over there that I was actually embarking on a kind of year long, with no clear deadline, journey of traveling around the world. And I'd be starting in Asia. And they asked me if I could give a technology perspective on it. When I started writing about my travels from a technology perspective, I realized there was actually a community that had existed centered around digital nomads, which are these independent, location-independent freelancers, writers, developers, creative people, thinkers, all kinds of job descriptions traveling all around the world. And that really clicked with me. So I started kind of really focusing a lot of my technology or cultural writing for Forbes around this community of digital nomadism or this idea of digital nomadism. And that's kind of where it all started. Twitter was kind of the base point for that. And I spent a lot of time finding all kinds of interesting people who are some really good friends of mine now. And I've actually never met most of them because we kind of just meet each other online often, but we started to put together this little group of people that would always share insights on where to go, what to do, but also a discussion around what it was like to constantly move around the world with no clear base, traveling and working at the same time.
Nice. So jump to a quick question here on a word that you mentioned, community. I know this one is a little bit tricky. You know, the digital nomads, one of the biggest pains is basically a little bit the sense of loneliness. Can you speak a little bit about, and again, I know this is totally amorphic, but if there is a community, as a digital nomad, how would you find the community? What are the best ways to find your like-minded people, both online and maybe offline as well?
It's a really interesting concept because, you know, for me, for example, I have my girlfriend, my partner, and we travel together. But even in that healthy relationship, there are times where we need to branch out and meet other people to socialize, to make friends. We've left everyone we know behind in another place and they can't join us, whether that's friends or family. I, in particular, have always excelled at finding people online. It's just part of my makeup. It's what I've always done since the beginning of time. I love to cultivate relationships online frequently. And so Twitter was a great space for that. People like Peter Levels, who invented Nomad List or created Nomad List, is the guy that kind of, you know, curated and cultivated a community where people can connect. Beyond that, there are plenty of opportunities from a travel perspective to meet people online. It comes down to how willing you are to put yourself out there. Hostels, certain types of group travel initiatives, as well as now kind of more recently, you're seeing startups that are building year-long digital nomad trips where they actually put together, you know, 50 strangers and you travel the world together for a year. Companies are picking up on the idea that you can socialize and make a business out of it. So it's a bit of a mixed bag. It's a big question, and I think my answer was a bit rambled, but it comes down to a combination of how much you're willing to put yourself out there, how active you are in the online space, and potentially even tapping into the different types of services that are now allowing people to socialize with each other in ways that they might not have been able to before.
So you mentioned the Nomad List, which is actually a nice resource. It's a Slack community. And you know, Kavi, one of the things that I noted is that actually if you're looking for a community, and I'm saying it from a point of pain now because I'm in Chisinau, Moldova, and I think I'm the only digital nomad in 100 kilometers radius now, I think choosing the location where you're at is critical if you are looking for a community. And maybe you, from your experience, can maybe give us some hotspots of locations where you say, okay, here you're going to find some like-minded people if you're a digital nomad?
Absolutely. I think for me, before I jump into that, that personally, I'm not someone that travels necessarily to go find other people. The location I picked is more for kind of selfish or personal reasons where I want to see that place or I want to experience that place. It just so happens that there might be colleagues or friends or people in the community that are hanging out there. So I don't necessarily pick my destination based on who's going to be there. It just happens to be a coincidence sometimes. That being said, Asia in particular, Southeast Asia, is one of the typical hotspots that you'll find many of those community-oriented influxes of people, because most digital nomads are based in the Thailands or the Cambodias or the Vietnams or the Laos of Asia. You're now starting to see a few more areas pop up in South America and as well as Europe. But I would say that Asia kind of was that typical space that you can find the majority of people. And I think that mostly happened because if you look at what most digital nomadism is right now, the mainstream version, it's essentially like an evolution of what backpacking was for gap year students or young people when they'd leave after school or in between school to go explore the world. We kind of just turned that on its head a little bit and applied a bit of career management to it as well.
Kavi, let's delve a little bit deeper into your own nomadic lifestyle. Because one of the biggest understandings, I guess, over time is that there is no one specific nomadic lifestyle. Each of us is constructing their own way of traveling. For example, what I've been doing in more than the last 5 years is basically changing places every 2 months, always to a new place. And I have a good friend, Aaron, who is changing places every week. Never boards a plane, only goes by either boats or bicycle, whatever. So Maybe you can tell us in a few sentences. We already know that you're traveling with a partner, and maybe you can tell us, other than traveling as a couple, what are the specific, let's say, maybe characteristics or rules, because you have those two bases, and how does it look like, your nomadic lifestyle?
That's a really interesting question. It's a topic I'm also exploring a bit more, and I agree with you. I think it's absolutely an evolution. My first year of digital nomadism was essentially just, technology-based backpacking. I had a huge backpack, and I was just moving quickly from country to country. That was the first year. It was much more budget-focused, much more about staying in, not so great places, but just experiencing great culture and writing and creating along the way. 2015 was a bit more organized, and it became more cash focused because I had a better job and I had better experiences coming through. So I was able to travel more frequently to places that I maybe was not able to afford the year before. To also evolve that point, I no longer carried a backpack. I kind of just had a carry-on duffel bag. So even what I carried with me kind of was compressed or compacted throughout the year. And I also found ways to go to places about every month and a half. This year, now 2016, we've already marked out, I'd say, probably a new destination every 2 months, or at least every month. And we'll be tackling a few different areas. And I think we've also just become more organized. It's incredible to see how quickly that evolution can take place. I don't think I ever expected to spend, 3 years straight backpacking. I think that'd be daunting. And I think for me and my partner, we've been able to evolve that because our idea of digital nomadism has changed from year to year. What was initially just, let's get out of here and go, has now transformed into, okay, let's make a career out of working remotely while also seeing the world. And now has become, a slightly bigger evolution of that, to the point that it's like, let's keep moving, let's keep writing, let's keep creating, and let's keep working virtually for all these companies that we work for.
How long do you usually stay in a new place when you do go from, let's say, from Australia or from Canada to a new place? How long do you stay to really feel like, is it more like an excursion, or is it more like I want to settle down there and get more deep feeling of how the place is?
Yeah, it can be anywhere from 2 weeks at the minimum to a month. And each time we go anywhere, you're absolutely right, we'll pick maybe one to two places and spend the majority of our time in a very limited space. I'll give you an example. We went to India in August and spent the majority of the time in just two cities or two regions. We're going back in February again, and we're going to pick two completely different regions so that we can do a bit of slow traveling throughout that month.
That's great. That's really great. Cool. So let's move on maybe to a question that is interesting. You're talking to a lot of digital nomads, and you know the trend very well. I guess a lot of the people who are listening to the podcast are thinking, should I go for it or not? I wanted to ask you about the future of digital nomads, of the trend itself. Do you see this as a growing phenomenon that more and more people do? Do you see, or maybe even if it's growing, how will it change? Do you have any, let's say, prediction for the future of this concept of becoming a digital nomad?
So to answer your first question, the idea, can everybody do this? I would say yes and no. I think people have to consider that constantly moving around from place to place, being very budget conscious, and in oftentimes, dealing with very, very strenuous travel and transportation situations, if you can't handle that, then it might not be right for you. The other concept is that, you don't have to do digital nomadism as a full-time gig. You could do it as a one-year thing. You could do it as a few months thing. It's up to you how long and how intensely you want to do it. And I think a lot of people in the community try to encourage people to make this as a 100% lifestyle change, but it doesn't have to be that way. I think people can find what fits for them. There are many working holiday options around the world that for young people can work out to be a good mix of a little bit of travel, but also a lot of base time. The evolution that I see happening is that digital nomadism is just one subset of the kind of bigger remote working culture. You have the work from home culture, you have telecommuting, you have, constantly being on the move, or you have this digital nomadism aspect where you can be location independent. I think what's going to happen is that Of course, more people are going to maybe, you know, be encouraged to adopt this type of lifestyle. They'll try it out. I think it'll also legitimize a lot of it. My kind of opinion has always been that digital nomadism has been largely for young white males in a tech background. And I think that's changing. We're seeing more women come into it. We're slowly starting to see more ethnic cultures come into it as well. And we're starting to see more of it become less about some glorified style of youthful backpacking, and really a type of career lifestyle choice that can essentially create a new balance between what's work and what's travel.
And you mentioned a few, let's say, cultures, and I think that also in your own writing, it's very mixed, the concept of focusing on digital nomads and also remote work. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the topic of digital nomad is a little bit of glorification of remote work. And I sometimes look at it as, you know, nobody wants us to work in offices anymore. They don't want to give us long-term contracts. And, everything is freelance oriented or maybe job oriented. And maybe the digital nomad topic is a little bit like the icing on the cake, that is a little bit like a pill that makes the pain go away a little bit, of us actually losing stability in life as a model. So what I would like to hear is, first of all, you know, your opinion on that, and also a few words about working remotely in general, the trends there as well, and do you think this one will also keep on growing as it has so far?
I think it's a really interesting point, and I think there are certainly critics of the lifestyle, me included. As much as I champion it, I also criticize certain elements of it that would see it that way. I work for a company, Strategizer, where we've got about 19 to 20 people distributed across nine countries. We're a completely virtual team. We've got colleagues who work remotely, but don't necessarily live a digital nomad lifestyle. They don't travel as frequently as, let's say, I would, or they don't just pick up, pack up, and go work somewhere else for a month. They still kind of work within a structure where they go into the office, or they work throughout the day, and then, you know, maybe every few months they go on a two-week vacation or a holiday. That's okay. I think what's changed is the flexibility is there. We're giving people, whether they're freelance or tied to a company in a career, the option to choose where they want to work, when they want to work, and how often they want to work. I think that flexibility allows individuals to understand their ability to be productive, and I think let their skills shine. Digital nomadism in particular is more about the lifestyle opportunity to go and see the world while doing work at the same time. It's the opportunity to, you know, experience places you might not experience in a typical 2-week, 4-week vacation package that you get from your employer. And in fact, it allows you to probably go out, make money, and, you know, experience things that, you know, on your own time if you wanted to.
So when you look, you've interviewed a lot of digital nomads, you know a lot of them as well. If you look at the more sustainable, you know what, let me go back and actually ask you a quick question that I'm always interested in, the definition. What is a digital nomad, or what makes someone a digital nomad? What makes someone location free? Because I have to tell you, this is a very complicated question. I always have those discussions with the people I interview. The definition of a nomad, what makes one person a nomad? Where's actually the line that says, no, you're only traveling for a while, or you're in one place and traveling a lot, and a place that you can say, yeah, this person is a digital nomad. Do you have some kind of, maybe, I know it's not going to be clear cut, but maybe something that helps you to define, or some parameters that you would look on when doing this, basically, decision of how to define someone?
Absolutely. I think my personal definition of the digital nomad is, a digital nomad is a location independent worker who works virtually for themselves or for a company and travels frequently. And when I mean frequently, I would say at least is in a new destination or a new place every 1 to 2 months.
Wow. That's a good definition. I like it. I'm gonna have to think about it. Now I have a little bit more weapons when I discuss about it. So this is good. Excellent. Now, going back to the question before, you've talked to a lot of digital nomads. You kind of figure out who is living it or who is doing it in a sustainable way for a long way or in a successful way that generates happiness. Do you have some kind of a profile when you actually, you know, you're trying to look at the common grounds of all the people you've spoken to, the digital nomads, of who is the person or the character and what exactly do they do that actually managed to pull it off and be happy with it? Any thoughts there?
So I've got a mix of people that I know and talk to frequently, and I would say a few common traits occur out of all that entire mix. One, they're healthy people. They're constantly fulfilling their mindfulness and their fitness. They work out, they eat well, and they take time to rest and reflect on what it is they've been afforded in their lifestyles. Two, they contribute very meaningful work to the world. You've got guys like Peter Levels, who is just really challenging himself to create all kinds of different companies that give people all kinds of different services. Some of them work, some of them don't, but he's always pushing himself to fail and learn. Another person is Eugene Doe, who's building her own documentary on the lifestyle. She's out there traveling, marketing it, and building it from scratch to show people what kind of lifestyle this is. And then there's a guy named Thomas, who I can never pronounce his last name. He's Lithuanian. And he's an incredible designer, and he's just out there trying to get people to rethink the way that they look at design or graphic design or visual design or user experience design. So they're contributing very meaningful work. And I think their happiness all comes from the idea that they keep healthy, they move around, and they value the idea of seeing an experience or spending on experience over spending on things. All digital nomads, at least the ones that I know, we don't have very much. We don't carry very many things. Even in my apartment, which is so small, I don't have many things. I only have maybe less than a week's worth of clothes. I probably rotate the same shorts and t-shirts or pants and shoes. And I don't buy a lot of stuff very often. The only things that we spend on are probably food, accommodation, transportation, and anything we need to enhance our working life, whether it's books or technology. And that level of, I think, frugality allows us to, rather than be happy because of what we own, be happy with what we get to experience in the world.
Now, a question that connects a little bit to the story of digital nomads. You know, the story has, you know more than anyone, the story has value. I'm going to give you some examples from my past. I'm basically building a site called Startup Link, a global startup ecosystem community and site. And I tried to get press. Press is one of the things that you're trying to get when you launch something. And mm-hmm. we had a lot of articles in CNN and actually in Forbes as well, with someone else, Kavi. So you should do an article soon about us as well. But we had CNN, Forbes, Business Insider, The Next Web, and so on and so on. And some of those articles were based on what we created, but some of the articles were actually, they took it to the personal story of Ellie's Digital Nomads, and my co-founder was a firefighter in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. So maybe this is just one thing to say. I guess that a lot of the listeners are thinking about building something. The story can be useful, right? As a digital nomad, it can get you the push that you're looking for your project as well. Would you advise people to actually bring it up when they speak to reporters? Because, you know, there are so many disadvantages to this lifestyle from the business perspective. But the story is valuable. Am I correct to say that?
I think it depends on how you use that story. Coming from a marketing background, I've had 10 years of marketing. Everyone's always hungry to get their name out there, to splash their name out there. And one of the things that I would always recommend is that if you're building a product, a company, a service, or a creative element that is going to connect with people, that's all that matters, because the number one thing you need is people talking about you, and you don't always have to go through the press to get that. I wrote a book last year with a colleague of mine in England, Anjali Ramachandra, and it's called Disruption in the Developing World. And all it does is it talks about a handful of startups from all over the developing world that are trying to make a difference for infrastructure in their regions, whether that's Africa, Middle East, Asia, South America, Eastern Europe. And, you know, we didn't put any press behind that. We just reached out to people and said, we're writing this book. Can you help us push it around? And people really latched onto that idea because it wasn't about us just trying to generate press from it. I think press will come, But if you focus more on just creating something that really matters to people, as fluffy as that sounds, I think people really discredit that. It's just focus on making something that people want and people care about, and the press or the accolades will come from that, or the awareness will come from that. To immediately go out there and try and tell a story through the media and to drum up hype, I don't think is the best way to do it. People are always so eager to get out there and get their name out there that I think it hurts them in a lot of ways, because of all the hype you can get, what matters most is the follow through. And can you actually deliver what it is you tried to hype up in the first place? I tend to have a very kind of hardline opinion on that, and I think that comes from being a marketer for so long. So a lot of people would say, well, you know what, I just want to go out there and I want to get my name out there, make it happen. And I'll say, you know what, no, I'm more interested in whether or not you can create something that's impactful in some way.
That's great. That's the lesson of building something useful is something that a lot of people, I have to say, I failed in this as well. When I look at my project, some of them, they became useful with time. But if I would change something in the way I would build them, is from the beginning, focus on being useful. And, I also think that, you know, if you get the press when the product is not useful, you did nothing, because you have one day of hype and then it's gone. And if you would have created something useful, you would get all those people, create engagement and have them keep on coming back. So actually you might be doing a favor to people that you tell them, hey, you're not ready yet, or there is no story yet, because, it's also about the timing, and you want to get the press in the right time. So that's actually a great lesson. And one maybe last question is on, let's say, as a digital nomad, this is something that I've been struggling with as well. Should you make the topic part of your career? So what am I saying? Basically, look at Peter from Nomad List. That's a good example of someone that combined his career with the nomadic lifestyle. However, there are a lot of digital nomads out there that, for example, myself, my main things in life are basically an online language school and the global startup ecosystem map. And the topic of digital nomads with the podcast is very much pushed aside as a hobby. You know, something that to remind myself that I'm not hustling and working all day, but also I have this ingredient in life that is cool that I want to share, but is not part of my career. I would like to ask you, let's say we have a lot of digital nomads out there that are like a potential digital nomad. Should they, when they build their career, mix the topic of digital nomad as a core activity in their career? Does it make sense? Or would you tell them, no, actually do something else and separate lifestyle from the career?
I think it's up to the person. There have been digital nomads long before the version that we have now, and they didn't really talk about it much, right? They weren't so tech focused or focused on the freelance or virtual team lifestyle. It was just a type of living that people did. And so I think it depends. For me in particular, I do it because I believe in documentation, and I believe that setting a reference point will help other people that need to make the jump. It'll make it easier for them. When I started out, there was nothing out there. There wasn't very much out there, and we had to kind of guess a lot of the way and make a lot of mistakes. The great thing about experience is that other people don't have to make those same mistakes. And so I write about it to share my experience, to highlight other people's experiences, and more importantly, to highlight the incredible contributions these different nomads are making through their work. More importantly, when I highlight that stuff, I don't say, this is what you have to do. I say, here's what happened to me. Here's what I experienced. Here's what I would suggest you could do. But if you don't want to do it, then don't do it. It's up to you to make your decision at the end of the day. I'm not going to push you into it. I think there are a lot of writers out there that are saying, you know, quite forcefully that if you do this, man, your life's going to be so much happier. And I don't like to make that promise. All I like to say is that if you're looking for a change, if you want to be challenged, and if you really want to shake up the way that you live and consider your career, your life, this could be a potential pathway for you to try out. Here's some ways you can do it. And there are people that'll do that really well, and there are people that won't do that at all, and some people that do it poorly. That's just my opinion, but it all comes down to how much you're willing to share. I think even you, for example, your podcast is a great example of just a hobby that is in some way knowledge sharing to those that might stumble upon it. And in some ways, you know, that leads to my work, and people will come and see my work and see the different details that I've written about this lifestyle. And it might encourage them to say, you know what, I can try that. I'm going to do it.
No, when I started 5 years ago. Also, there was no information. In retrospective, I have to tell you, Kavi, there was a lot of information. I didn't know where to find it because I didn't know about the topic of digital nomad. So basically, it's all Google. So actually, my search brought me to a business forum and I started posting, what do I do if I want to travel the world? I was pretty sure that if I'm going to do it, I'm going to be the only person in the world. So I guess that, you know, and it was a surprise to see that it's actually a trend. So this was actually good stuff. Let me add one more last question, which is basically, let's say, if you want to start a digital nomad lifestyle, can you recommend maybe 3 or 4 resources, the first places you can go and pick a little bit of information? I know a lot of people are mentioning the 4-hour work week, which I think is maybe a little bit outdated, but still a great book. But maybe you can give us a few more resources that come to mind of where to go. And I'll just put a caveat there and say to people, in the end of the story, it's all about doing it. So you can't be 100% prepared. You know, in the end, it's actually the action of taking a backpack or a suitcase and just going for it. But resources that help, that you say, okay, those are the major cornerstones currently of this lifestyle where people can look at.
So I think just to, you know, to make a point, the 4-Hour Workweek was an interesting book. I don't know if it necessarily encourages a location independent lifestyle. It definitely encourages a do less to get more done lifestyle, or to, you know, reorganize your lifestyle in order to bring focus so that you have more time to do things you actually enjoy. It's a bit sensational in parts, but it's an entertaining read. I would say other good resources. I mean, Peter Levels, I talk about him a lot. I love him. His kind of nomad list, or his I can't remember the name of the website right now, but that entire website that he has dedicated to the best hotspots on nomad travel is great. It tells you everything about where to go, how much it'll cost you, and what type of amenities are in that region, like Thailand, for example. So you can pick the right destination based on what you're into. I'm going to recommend myself. I do a lot of writing on the topic extensively, and I share a lot about my insights as well as other people's insights to kind of give specific types of advice on what they can do or what someone could do. And at the end of the day, I think it really is, you just got to get out there and do it. You have to just pick a place, save up for it, get out there and kind of struggle with it for a bit and see what happens.
Cool, Kavi. So thank you very much for taking the time. Hopefully we will get you on the podcast again in the future, because you know so much about not only about the people who are actually living it, but the trends as well as to what to expect in the future. And I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Okay, so that's all for today. Thanks, Kavi, again for taking the time. And as for you digital nomads out there, please consider giving us a review on iTunes or any other platform. You can visit Become Nomad for detailed show notes, where you can also comment about the episode, and you can also subscribe to the newsletter on the site. And see you around.